Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, September 21st, 2008, and this is show number 170. I was going to say, man, that's getting really close to 200 until I realized, no, that's 30 weeks, so that's like, better part of a year. So anyway, it's not close to 200. Stand down. Well, today's going to start out with a rant. I know it sets a bad tone to start out cranky, but I promise you chit-chat across the pond is lighthearted this week, and I have a special treat for you later in the show that's going to crack you up. My rant is on behalf of my beloved husband, Steve. Steve has created probably close to 100 or maybe even more beautiful DVDs for us, for our friends, our family. Even the cross-country team has been the beneficiary of Steve's beautiful DVDs. He even did one for a wedding once. He takes in old videos from VHS tapes and turns them into beautiful masterpieces. He even uses new camcorders, and he imports them into iMovie HD. He creates chapters, he adds music, he exports it to iDVD 06, and then he makes lovely menus to allow the viewer to jump to their favorite scene easily. Trust me, there's one of Kyle with a sprinkler when he was little that's hysterical. We always jump straight to that one. Well, he's done all of our home movies from the early 1980s on VHS through to our latest adventures. We watch them so much more often now that we can jump to the right scene. Chapters, those are really important. That's going to come up later in the plot. Well, he has a really efficient workflow that works perfectly as he lays in the music to make everything even more professional. Where's the rant, you ask? Well, let me tell you what happened. So Steve's sister videotaped the events surrounding his grandmother's funeral. That sounds funny to tape your grandmother's funeral, but there were a lot of really special moments during that event, and they went back to their childhood cabin on a lake, and it's just a lot of great material. But his sister did the videotaping. Steve did not bring his own video camera. Well, her video camera creates some weird wide format that's not HD. It's 960 by 540, which is kind of funky, but whatever, should be fine. Well, Steve only carried his MacBook Air with him. He didn't actually have the old iMovie HD on it. He only had iMovie 08. But he figured, what's the big deal? I'll just move it into iMovie HD when I get home. Not a big problem, right? So he plugs the camera into the MacBook Air. It sucks the movie and the video into iMovie 08. He's looking good. Comes home. Well, after he gets home, his sister says, I took more video after you left, and it's really good stuff. They went out crabbing. I don't know. The family had a good old time. So Steve wanted to include that stuff in the video. So they decided to transfer the rest of the video to Steve using Dropbox. This is a great way of transferring huge files, but in this case, these were huge files. So it took, a week or two to get all the videos over to Steve. Okay, so he's now got his movies in iMovie 08. Well, you know, Steve's not a Luddite. He doesn't like to sit back on old technology. Decides to get it, give it a try. Well, early on, he's getting annoyed because iMovie 08 has the nasty habit of showing the beach ball of death while it's processing the entire movie whenever you do anything. It likes to save all by itself. So when he's in the middle of working, he can't do anything. So it keeps doing this save and save and save, and that was really annoying. He also told me some minor functions take way too long to perform when he's editing a large movie. In this case, it was a two-hour movie. Up until this point, it's just really annoying and aggravating. But then it takes a catastrophic turn. Steve realizes that iMovie 08 will not do chapter markers. Remember I talked about how important it was to be able to jump to the scene you want to go to? Well, you can't do that without chapter markers. Can't do it. But Steve Jobs has decided that people don't make DVDs anymore, so why would they need chapter markers? Well, wait a minute. Why do you have iMovie 08 and iDVD 08? Why did you make iDVD 08 if we're not going to make DVDs? Why did you do that? Well, I figured Steve he's just wrong. There's got to be in there. He just hasn't found the menu. I'll talk to a few people like Victor and things like that. We'll find it. So I didn't find anything out right away. So I went to the message boards only to find out that Steve was right. Steve Jobs took chapter markers out of iMovie 08. Is he just mean? Is he evil? What's the deal? Well, anyway, Steve hunts around and he finds a trick that says you can actually pull an iMovie 08 movie. Oh, of course, you tried to put it into iMovie HD and that didn't work at all. But he finds a trick where you can actually pull it into GarageBand to make chapter markers. Well, that sounded really weird, but hey, that sounds worth a try. So inside iMovie 08, he hits a button that is supposed to be allowed to export to GarageBand from iMovie 08. It took 18 hours. I'm not kidding, 18 hours. Now, this is an older machine. It's a dual-core 2 gigahertz G5, but it's not that bad on everything he's done before, but all of a sudden, this is 18 hours just to export it. Now, that means he's got to import it into GarageBand too, right? That took another 3.5 hours. Okay, we're talking close to an entire day to transfer the file from iMovie 08 into GarageBand just to put in the stupid chapter markers that Steve Jobs could have let us have. Don't worry, it gets worse. The story gets much worse. Okay, he's finally got it in GarageBand, and he's creating the chapters in there, and then he goes to try to export it. And you know what it says? It says there's a 2 gigabyte file size limit for export, and his file is 3 gigabytes. Oh, man, he said some bad words right then, let me tell you. Well, that was last Sunday night, right before I recorded live. So, as I like to do during the live show, every once in a while I hit pause and I go over and I yak with the people in the chat room. We were on a break and I told the story of everything that was going wrong. And contributor to the show and good friend of the show, Willie, explained that there's this weird trick. In GarageBand, if you tell it, don't normalize the audio, you can go beyond 2 gigabytes. And what on earth normalizing the audio has to do with going beyond 2 gigabytes? I don't know, but what the heck? It's worth a try. I mean, the previous solution we found out about how if your file name was more than 32 characters, it wouldn't save the file at all. There's a lot of weird stuff in GarageBand. We'll give it a try. So Steve turns off normalizing. He starts a new export from GarageBand, and it works. Yay! Willie's our hero. And this is where it gets tragic again. All right. He completed his export from GarageBand. He's got the file out on his desktop. He went back into iMovie 08. He wanted to get a screenshot of one scene, right? So he makes a little screenshot in iMovie 08. iMovie 08 stops the export. Oh, I guess he hadn't finished it. He hadn't finished exporting yet. It stopped the export from GarageBand and erased the entire file in GarageBand. I'm serious. It erased. Remember the file that took 18 hours to get out of iMovie 08 and 3.5 hours to get into GarageBand? It erased it. Took it. Got rid of it. Erased it from his disk. Okay, the bad words are mounting. Things are getting really ugly around the house. So he did go through the entire 18-hour process yesterday and the 3.5 hours into GarageBand again. So he lost all day Saturday of getting to play with his movie. And oddly enough, the chapter markers did not need to be recreated when he got it back into GarageBand. After all this, he was finally able to export it into iDVD 08 with chapter markers. And luckily, that didn't take too long to pull it in. But now he's in iDVD 08, right? Well, in the old one, he's in 08. When he was in iDVD 06, it would take about 3 hours to encode a 2-hour DVD. I mean, you know, it is an older machine. I know he needs a quad-core Xeon Mac Pro. I can just hear Victor telling me right now. But on it's not a big deal. 3 hours, whatever. Go have dinner, come back. You're good to go. Anyway, he's on iDVD 08 now. It's taking 9 hours. I'm not kidding you. 9 hours. It is taking 3 times as long to encode with iDVD 08 than it did on iDVD 06. Needless to say, this is the kind of product enhancement he can do without, and he's going back to iMovie HD and his old standby iDVD 06. Thanks, Steve Jobs. Really, thanks. So I'm driving home from the gym yesterday, and I'm thinking, oh, man, I didn't get any dumb questions this week. Maybe I should just cue the music, but then say that all the dumb questions have evidently been asked and answered. Well, I stopped at a light, and I checked my mail on the iPhone, and I found out that David had sent in a dumb question. I think David was reading my mind.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
Dumb questions.
How do I...
What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Now we can start the dumb questions. We've got our music and ready to go. Well, here's what David had to say. First, I would like to say, awesome podcast. I've enjoyed every episode. My dumb question is, when I delete an application by dragging it to the trash can, is it completely uninstalled, or is there more I should do to ensure that it's completely deleted? Thanks, David. I love this question, David. This is perfect because there's a great answer. For years, I just threw away applications by dragging them into the trash. And while nothing catastrophic goes wrong right then when you do it, the application is leaving a bunch of slop around on your system. Most applications will leave preference files, application support files, and who knows what else, lying around mucking things up and increasing the chances of those unexplained failures that crop up from time to time, no matter how much we pretend to the Windows users that we never have those problems. Reggie Ashworth has an application called AppDelete that just came out in version 2. I've been using AppDelete for ages, and it works great for me. It's an unusual application because you drag the application you're tired of onto the AppDelete icon to throw it away. So it's a little weird. You don't open it so much as just drag it onto the icon. AppDelete asks you a few times if you're sure and tells you where it's putting the files in the trash can so you can go look for yourself to see if it's really throwing away what you wanted it to do. And it's also fun to see how many things it finds to throw away that we would have never cleaned up ourselves. I tried AppZapper when it first came out, this was several years ago, and I found a lot of little files that still left around. I would run AppDelete and it would get all of the ones I could think of to go check on. You can try AppDelete for free, but after it cleans up a couple of applications for you, it makes you pay to keep on using it. He doesn't insist on a specific price, but I paid him $10 because I've gotten so much good use out of it. I think his lower limit is lower than that, but I've had a lot of good fun with it over the years. I put AppDelete up in my menu bar in the Finder so that I always have it in every window as an easy way to delete my old applications. You know, with as many as I load in a week, AppDelete is an absolute necessity. And I'm glad you like the show, David. This week at work, I had to take a gruesome training class where the tests for the class each took about 2 hours, and there were four of them. If you don't get an 80% or higher, you have to take the test over. And some of the questions repeat themselves, but many of them are different. You only get 3 shots to take the test, and then you have to go to a meeting to explain why you're a moron if you don't pass it. So I was pretty tense coming into this. Well, as I answered each multiple choice question, I decided to use Screen Steps to take a screen snapshot of my answer, and then I could write text in it below in the text area where I found the answer in the documentation. That way, when the test was done and they told me my score, after they told me which ones I got wrong, I could go back and try to do some more research to find the right answer. They don't tell you the right answer, so you got to go dig it up yourself. By capturing my answers and my logic, I knew I could go back and revisit them if I had to take the test over. And I did fail one test once. I got the other 3 on my own, but one of them I had to go back and restudy and try to figure out what the right answers were. It worked great as a study guide as I went through it, too, because I'd get a related question, I'd be able to scroll back and see how I answered an earlier question, and more importantly, where I found the answer in the documentation I'd been given. The finale, though, was when I got my passing grade on the last test. In a fit of excitement, I was so happy I was done with all these stupid tests, I took a screenshot showing that I'd passed the test. This turned out to be a great thing, after all, because I pushed exit on the application in IE8 Beta 2, and IE8 crashed, and the system did not record the fact that I even took the class. So, with the help of Screen Steps, I studied better, I passed the test, and I was able to prove it and get credit for the class. You know, I know this isn't what Screen Steps is really for, but I think it's interesting to think about the fact that there's all these creative ways to make your life even more fun and enjoyable with Screen Steps. Let me tell you, I really enjoy not having to go back and take that 2-hour test a second time. One thing I do want to impress on people is that Screen Steps is not a screen capture program. I've had people write to me going, well, why don't you just use Sketch? Now, I love Sketch. It's a great screen capture program, but that's not what Screen Steps is. It happens to have a screen capture built in, but you can use any screen capture tool you want, including Sketch. But the main reason to use Screen Steps is to be able to create beautiful documentation, adding text, graphics, annotations, chapters, creating HTML, PDFs. I mean, it's such a broad product that I think I'm having trouble describing how much it actually does. I hope you give it a test drive by going over to screensteps.com or by clicking the giant Screen Steps logo in the right-hand sidebar on podfeet.com and download a free trial version and play with it yourself so you get a better idea of how this thing works. Watch the great videos they've got there, too. It really shows you how this thing works. After you're hooked and you want to buy it, be sure to enter the coupon code NOSILLA, That's my name spelled backwards if you haven't figured that out yet, in all capital letters, and you get an extra 25% off. Well, I have a fun enhancement to the website to tell you about, thanks to good friend of the show, Debbie T. from splashofstyle.com. If you write a comment on the show, and I answer it, or someone else makes a related comment on that episode, you're never notified. You don't know that somebody's commenting back. I always struggle when somebody puts a comment. Should I write on the blog so everybody can read it, or should I write back directly to the person to make sure they knew I answered them? Sometimes I'd even do both. Well, Debbie T. told me about a WordPress plugin called Subscribe to Comments. With this nifty little plugin installed on my server, which is about as hard as uploading a file, opening my WordPress dashboard, and clicking Enable next to the plugin, now there's a little checkbox right next to the comment you've created that simply says, notify me of follow-up comments via email. Could not be simpler. I really appreciate Debbie giving me that hint. I'd meant to go looking for something like that because I knew it was out there somewhere, but she spoon-fed me instead, and that's way better. Well, the only way this could be even cooler is if you didn't even have to contribute to the show notes, and in your laziness, you could request to be notified via email even if you never commented. Debbie T. also showed me how to do that by putting a checkbox that says subscribe without commenting down near the comment areas. But that part was a little bit of gene splicing. You actually have to edit the PHP files on the server and make copies and do all that scary programming stuff. But I had only you in mind when I forged ahead and did as she suggested. All right, it wasn't that dramatic. I kind of had to copy a line she typed for me and paste it into a file where she told me to paste it. But it felt like I was a programmer for a minute there. It's like I felt all high tech. Anyhow, now we've got some increased fun with comments. So comment away, get emails, and check out Debbie T's great site over at splashofstyle.com. Next up, we've got a review of Minefield from Donald Burr.
Hi, this is Donald Burr of Otaku No Podcast and Voices of Aaron, here with a quick tip. Trust me, this is going to be a quick one. Now, I'm sure you've all heard of the Firefox web browser. It's the alternative open source web browser done by the folks at the Mozilla Foundation. Its two main claims to fame, well, three main claims to fame if you count the fact that it's open source, are that it's wicked fast and that it's easily user extensible through a variety of plugins and various other add-ons and themes and such like. Today I'm going to talk about Firefox's speed. Yeah, Firefox is wicked fast, all right, but did you know there's yet another browser that's even faster than Firefox? Yes, it's true. It's called Minefield. Actually, that's sort of a lie. Minefield technically is the Firefox browser. Minefield is the code name that the Firefox project gave to the 3.0 release of Firefox. Basically, what happened is this. One of the Firefox developers, I'm not exactly sure of his name, but anyways, he decided that he would release optimized builds of Firefox. Basically, he would take the Firefox source code and compile it in a highly optimized manner for both the Intel and the PowerPC processors. Now, technically, only the Mozilla team can release a browser and call it Firefox. Therefore, this guy had to call his version of Firefox something different. So he called it Minefield, which is, as I said before, the code name of the Firefox 3.0 release. Anyways, this thing is wicked fast. It's even faster than Firefox. So if you're trying to squeeze every last bit of performance out of your machine, by all means, give this a try. But here's where it really shines. What if you have an older Intel Mac, let's say maybe one of the original MacBooks that you bought back when Steve introduced them in 2006? You know, the one older, slower Core Duo processors, not even the Core 2 Duos. Or even, what if you have an even older Mac, like an older G4? For example, I recently found a pair of 700 MHz PowerPC G4 eMacs at a local university surplus sale. These are great machines, and I snapped them up because, well, the price was very, very attractive. Now, these are older machines, so they're a bit pokey, but I installed Tiger on them. You know, Tiger's is the previous version of Mac OS X, and I noticed Safari on these machines was a little bit pokey, but I tossed the G4 PowerPC optimized build of Minefield on them, and they run super fast. So if you're trying to breathe new life into an older machine, then Minefield might just be the ticket. Don't worry, it's fully compatible with all the Firefox extensions, plugins, themes, and all that other good stuff that's out there, so you don't need to give up your favorite plugins or add-ons. You can download Minefield for free in both Intel and PowerPC optimized builds at the URL that Allison will, I'm sure, put in the show notes. Now, back to your regularly scheduled NozillaCast.
Well, first of all, Donald, congratulations in making it well under 5 minutes. We all knew you could do it. Second of all, what an interesting find. I had never heard of this. My Mac fits your description. I have one of the Intel Core Duos, not even a Core 2 Duo. Believe it or not, I have one of the slowest machines in the house. Come on, Apple, update the MacBook Pros already. Anyway, I'll be sure to give Minefield a try, and I will definitely put the link in the show notes to beatnikpad.com. I talked to, my son Kyle came in, and I had been telling him about this, and he came in the other day and said, hey, what was that thing Donald recommended? I got to try that. So anyway, it looks like it's working fine for him. Good find, Donald. This week, I did a review for Tim Verporten's Mac Review Cast of VideoQ Pro from flipformac.com. It's a really useful, cool program for making videos with a teleprompter, and it gives you the ability to add cool titles and insert slides, move your own video around on the screen, all kinds of slick effects. I know it's boring if I play reviews here that I do over there, so I won't do that. You can head on over to Mac Review Cast and check it out. But I did the review while actually using VideoQ Pro, which makes video podcasts. So I did the whole thing in video. I know, it's scary just thinking of looking at my old face while listening, but I think it's a fun way to show what VideoQ Pro can actually do. So I embedded the video in the show notes so you can go check it out right there. It's pretty cool. Well, I wanted to remind you of a painless way you can help support the show. If you buy anything at Amazon, and I think we all do, consider clicking the Amazon link in the right sidebar over at podfeet.com to get there get into Amazon instead of going directly to amazon.com. If you go through that link and buy anything of your heart's desires, you don't have to buy the thing that's in the little ad. A small percentage of the purchase price of what you buy goes into the NozillaCast coffers and helps support the show. Like I said, you definitely do not have to buy what's in the ad. Just get into Amazon that way and it helps out the show. Well, at the beginning, I promised you a special treat, and here it is, an interview with a young gentleman that I am certain you'll enjoy. I have a special guest on today. I'd like to introduce you to Alex Perry, who I met in Quark's Bar when I was at the New Media Expo last month. How are you doing tonight, Alex?
I am very well, thank you.
So it was a really funny thing. I went into Quark's Bar and ran into two guys from the New Media Expo, Jonathan and Damon, and the three of us were speaking animatedly. I believe Jonathan was telling some involved story about a British comedy or British series, and this young man, Alex, looked over and clearly wanted to be part of the conversation, so we dragged him in, and that began about 3 or 4 hours of conversation in the bar, I think, that night.
It should also be known that Alex had a little too much to drink as well, so that may have had something to do with him butting into the conversation when he wasn't invited.
Well, actually, what was funny was I think Jonathan and Damon were stone cold sober, but you and I were bookending them with a couple of beers there. So, but the funniest thing was you were supposed to leave on a plane the next morning, so we all said our tearful goodbyes. The next night I walk into the bar, and I was going to a restaurant, actually, but I happened to walk through the bar, and there you guys were again.
Yeah, so I both hate and love U.S. Airways for that very reason.
Now, you went to take your flight back to Washington, D.C., but they were delayed or something?
Yeah, they basically told me that I could. The one plane was delayed by 20 minutes, so I would miss my connecting flight, and the earliest flight they could get me on was midnight. So I said, fair enough. I'm not all that angry, though I feel I should be, because it just means I get to go back to the bar for the rest of the day, so... That's what I did.
So you spent a half a day in a bar?
Exactly. And then ended up sitting next to an incredibly large woman on the plane home. Oh. But the beers certainly helped.
Well, the reason I have Alex on the phone here today is because during one of those 2 days we were in the bar, he told me a great story about how much he's really enjoying Windows Vista. And I wanted to get him to tell us a little bit about how great of an experience Vista really is for you. And this is real life experience, right?
Oh yeah, this is just from the real life experience of an everyday student who isn't all that technical, I have to say, but has made some questionable decisions he's come to understand over the course of his life.
Well, I believe you're still using a Razer. Is that what you said?
Yeah, exactly.
And what kind of media player was it you had again?
Creative Zen.
Okay, so you're not the high tech guy.
About 5 years old now.
You're not the high tech audience member of usual. You are the everyday guy. So how's Vista working for you there?
Badly. It sucks. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, because I once made a very similar decision, which was that when I was about to upgrade to a new computer just after Windows XP had come out, and I thought, no, I'm going to – and it gave me an option. It said you can either have Windows ME or you can have Windows XP. And I thought, ooh, Windows XP is really new. I'm not sure I'm going to dip my toe into that. So I chose Windows ME, which was also a huge mistake because I got stuck with that computer for 2.5 years before I bit the bullet and upgraded to XP.
Oh.
And so it came around – exactly the same situation came around this time. It said, do you want to stick with XP, which I was perfectly happy with, or do you want to upgrade to Vista? And I said, well, I made this mistake last time. I'll upgrade to Vista. And that was a terrible mistake I've never recovered from.
Now, come on. All these rumors, people talk about Vista being bad, but I mean, what's so bad about it? I mean, it works, right?
It works. Yeah. I mean, in that you can do something and have it do something back to you, but it's the annoying things that just build up over time, like 90% of the time, just after I've switched on the computer, the first program I load will crash immediately.
90% of the time?
90% of the time.
Oh, my gosh.
I'd say 90% of the time. I don't really notice it anymore just because I'm used to loading up Internet Explorer, having it crash, and having to reload it.
So every time you boot up, you start Internet Explorer, it crashes, and then you start again, and then it's fine?
Yeah. And it's fine. It's fine for about 2 or 3 hours up until the point that right-click doesn't work anymore. And that's the point where – and then other stuff starts going wrong on the rest of the computer. And I have to restart it every 2 to 3 hours or so just to make sure everything is fine, which I don't feel I should be required to do.
Demanding.
I thought I was supposed to be able to turn a computer on and leave it on, and that would just be fine. I know that would be environmentally unfriendly, but that was supposed to be fine.
But
no,
amazing.
Here I am. Yeah, exactly.
Now, what about Service Pack 1 came out? Did that solve any of your problems?
Well, you see, I was excited the other day because I had been informed by people far more technically aware than I was that whenever its service pack came out, it meant that it would fix a load of the problems. And I'd been told that up until this point, there hadn't been a service pack for Vista, at least not one that I downloaded on my computer. So it said, do you want to download Service Pack 1? And I was like, yes, I really would like to download Service Pack 1 because then maybe things won't crash all the time anymore. And so I dutifully downloaded Service Pack 1, and it took about an hour and a half for it to all, you know, download and install and configure and restart 12 times. And then after that, I thought, that's amazing. And it made me miss class. Then the first time it loaded up, it took about like 10 minutes to boot up. And I thought, well, this is very strange. But maybe it's just because it's still configuring. But now it takes 10 minutes to boot up every time. And it doesn't seem to have fixed any of the problems.
Oh, you're kidding. 10 minutes to boot up?
Yeah.
No,
about that.
I think I heard that maybe it caches stuff, and so for the first couple of times, it's going to take a little bit longer, but it's supposed to speed up over time. Maybe there's a little bit of hope there.
Maybe there's a little bit of hope, but so far I seem to have learned that nothing to do with this laptop is involved with hope, so it's all
grim doom is all you get.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a love-hate relationship in which there's very little love and mostly hate. So really, it's a hate-hate relationship. I'm going to be completely honest with you. That's all it is. But I wouldn't want it any other way. I mean, I can't imagine it because there's a relationship going on here. And it feels like an actual relationship with another human being. I wouldn't want a machine to do exactly what I told it to do because that wouldn't feel right. I don't think things should be easy like that. I think there needs to be tension and there needs to be – because that's how good marriage works. And in many ways, I feel like my laptop is a little bit like my second wife.
So you want her to have
second wife. I don't have a first wife.
I wondered about that.
I say second wife because I don't want to seem like I'm that sad.
Well, if you were to buy a new computer today, what would you buy?
If I were to buy a new computer today, I am fairly certain I would not buy the one I have at the moment. because you want me to say that I would upgrade to an iMac or something like that, don't you?
That was kind of a setup there.
Yeah, that was. I sensed the setup and I defied it because I could.
You just won't walk into it, huh?
Well, no, it's not that I won't walk into it. I probably will upgrade to this Apple thing that people keep telling me about at some point. After my Zen breaks down and my laptop no longer functions anymore.
No, I wish
I'm also one of those people. I feel like I have to get my money's worth out of it. So,
and it's only like a year old or something, right?
Yeah, it is only a year old. That is the worst thing about it. My last one only lasted 2 years before it destroyed itself.
Oh, man. Now, what I would like to know is right before you're going to buy a new computer, let me know so I make sure I don't buy whatever it is you're going to get.
That is probably a good idea. I should probably send a blast email to everyone I know just to let them know I'm buying a new computer and this is what it is. So
it's going to be
whatever
horrible.
You do, don't buy that one. Yeah, it's going to be horrible.
I think we did mock you just a little bit for your Creative Zen. I believe it's the size of maybe like four decks of cards.
A house.
And it's what, 4 gig or something?
It's more than that. It's about 20 gigs, but yes, it is not an insubstantial piece of machinery. Let's put it like that.
It's kind of a manly device though, you know.
Exactly. I like feeling the weight of the device at my side. I'm one of those people who has a giant wallet that's full of more change than he needs and always has those huge chunks of keys that's got like 3 keys and 20 key rings on it just because I like having that comforting weight at my side and knowing that it's always there. I wouldn't want things to be so light that I would lose them easily. You know, if my belt isn't done up 2 notches too tight because of the sheer weight of my trousers, then I'm worried that things aren't there and I'm constantly checking to find them.
Well, Alex, I hope you'll come back and visit the show again sometime soon and we can and hear about your trials and enjoy a little more conversation with you.
Well, I see. I'm slowly working my way through your library and trying to induct myself into the more technologically understanding way of things.
Oh, good.
So we'll see.
All right. Maybe you can do a tech recording for us sometime.
Right click and press OK.
Reboot.
Yeah. Again.
All right, Alex. Thanks for joining us today.
No problem.
Well, I simply love talking to Alex. Man, that guy just cracks me up. I told him that if he has any other tech tales to tell, I'll be sure to get him back on the show because I just think he's hilarious and I love his voice. So, how's your car doing? You change the oil lately? Is the engine light on, reminding you have some regularly scheduled maintenance? You've been putting it off, haven't you? Because you hate to lose time from your busy life to go fart around at a dealer or some creepy mechanic shop where you just pray they won't botch up the job and you hope they only rob you blind instead, right? Yeah, I know. I know. That's the way it is. Well, if you've got a Honda or an Acura and you happen to live in the LA or Orange County areas, give Honda Bob a call instead. Imagine having your maintenance needs taken care of without ever leaving the comfort of your own home. I'm serious. I've been taken care of by Honda Bob for the past 30 years, and I will never buy anything but a Honda or an Acura because of that. Trust me, I won't even look at another kind of car. Give Honda Bob a call at 562-531-2321 or send him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Time for another exciting episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from BartB.E.I.E. Oh, I almost got it right, Bart.
You got there.
Give me
one more
words.
Week and I think you'll have it down.
There you go. How are you today?
I'm really good, actually. It's the end of summer. Summer is technically over. It's September. But now, today, we've had our best day of the summer. and one could argue our first day of the summer. But no, it's been absolutely fantastic. There has not been a cloud in the sky between when I got up, which I grant you wasn't morning, I think it was 2 p.m., until now. Not a single solitary cloud. I got the lawn mowed, I got out with the camera. I think I have some really nice shots. I'll find out when I bart them later, as the ladies from Australia would say. But all in all, it has been a lovely evening. I got to wear a t-shirt the whole day. So I'm in a very good mood.
Well, fantastic. Well, we'll probably still manage to work an argument into this somehow. We'll get you in a bad mood. Well, let's see. I wanted to give everybody an update on our rant from last week, or my rant from last week against iPhoto and the fact that there was not an easy way to upload videos out of iPhoto. Now, a whole lot of people sent me the link to say, well, why don't you just use the iPhoto exporter to Facebook, which I already know about, but that's not the problem. The problem was uploading videos. But luckily, not only Donald Burr, but also Ivan Jorgensen both sent in a little trick that I'm just so excited about. I did not know was there. If you go to do an upload, like let's say in Facebook, it's a web-based uploader that's a Java application. It says browse. And then when you go to browse your Finder disk, you get a special kind of Finder window. On the left-hand side, it has the normal devices and places and all your folders like you would see in a normal Finder window. But below that, it's got a special pull-down called Media that you normally don't see. In there, it's got music, photos, and movies. If you click on movies, it shows you your iMovie movies. It shows you your regular movies folder, and it also shows you iPhoto. If you create and it's got a link in there for regular movies, or if you create a smart folder like we did a couple of weeks ago on the show, it'll show that too. So you can get right to your videos and do exactly what you want. You don't have to export it. You don't have to make a copy. You just shoot straight from the Finder window right up into Facebook.
Well, I think that's there on every open dialogue, isn't it? It's not there on saved dialogues, but I think it's there on every open dialogue.
Right. But you don't see it in a normal Finder window. If you're just in the Finder, you don't have access to that.
It's not in the Finder, it's not in saved dialogues, but it is in every open dialogue. Because I just went to my Flickr uploader, custom web app thing made with Fluid.
Uh-huh.
And I went, choose photos and videos, and lo and behold, that little media thing is there. And when I click on photos, I get everything by album, just as I would expect.
I am just so excited about this. This was cool. I called Lindsay and told her, and she was just really excited. So I wanted to thank both Ivan and Donald. And Ivan shot us his Twitter name is twitter.com/slowdat, S-L-O-D-A-T. So follow Ivan over at twitter.com.
This whole thing actually reminds me of something you always say, which is if you're on the Mac and something is hard to do, you're doing it wrong. So stand back and look at what's the obvious answer, and that's probably what will turn out to be the right answer. And lo and behold, it really is quite obvious, but neither of us had noticed it. And I've noticed those things, and I've never actually thought, oh, I wonder what happens if I click this. I've just sort of,
Well, that's been there. Great. I mean,
it's been there since Leopard, at least.
Right.
In fact, I think it came with Leopard because I don't think it was there in Tiger.
Okay. If somebody can check it on Tiger, if they've got it, that would be interesting to know if it's there a rev back. So very, very cool. Well, it's time for us to eat our vegetables now. Enough fun. Let's eat some vegetables, Bart.
Talk. I like broccoli.
No, I like broccoli.
I hate broccoli.
You don't like broccoli?
No, broccoli is like cauliflower that isn't ripe.
Oh, broccoli's awesome. I love broccoli. Let's call it Brussels sprouts. I hate Brussels sprouts.
Brussels sprouts are fantastic. You have to cook them right, though. You have to add a little knob of butter, and it takes out all the bitterness, and you take off the outer dark leaves.
I think maybe the way you got to cook them is at your house, not my house. That's the right way to cook them.
Oh, they're gorgeous. Would have been a nutmeg on them, a bit of butter. Anyway, sorry.
All right, so.
You can tell I'm hungry, can't you?
So let's talk about security for a few minutes. We're going to try to keep it short, but we got a couple things to talk about. Why don't you kick it off, Bob?
Well, yeah. For anyone who hasn't noticed yet, there's been an update to the iPhone 2 weeks ago by now, I think. And it would be wise to update because it makes actually fixes quite a few pretty nasty things, including a flaw in the actual networking stack, which worries me immensely because it's actually one of those fundamentally stupid errors that, wouldn't make it through an old stack. If they had actually used OS X's networking stack for the iPhone, they could never have possibly made a mistake this stupid. So it had to be a new one they wrote specially for the iPhone, which means it's probably full of other stupid mistakes.
Okay, so this was a networking stack fix for the iPhone. So what does that mean
for the iPhone? Before the fix, it was possible to basically hijack TCP/IP connections. And normally TCP is safe from that kind of thing, and it's UDP that isn't.
Okay.
But it's safe because the sequences of the IDs should not be predictable, and they were on the iPhone.
Okay.
And it's a really fundamental mistake that it could not, I mean, if it was using Mac's networking stack, which dates back to probably the 70s in FreeBSD, there's no way the mistake would have lasted till now, so it has to be a new stack.
Okay, but the good news is they fixed it, right?
They fixed this one, but if you have a whole new networking stack, I can guarantee you it's full of more silly mistakes.
Okay, what else?
You know, networking stacks are the kind of things that take about 10 years to get all the crud out of them. And so I'm worried that something this fundamental snuck into the iPhone stack, because it means there's probably more nightmares in there. It worries me. It just caught my eye reading through the list of errors, like, what? That shouldn't be there. But it is. It's a little worrying. I wouldn't panic about it, but don't be surprised if there's more.
Okay. So there was something about Safari?
Yeah, then there's the big news. Well, yeah, there was also a Safari one. Just all the usual stuff. Go to a website, get your iPhone hacked, that kind of thing. So patch.
Okay.
And don't wait about it, because, you know, they're serious flaws. There's nothing dramatic in that. You know, remote code execution is pretty much the norm these days, but just patch, get it fixed.
Okay.
It's par for the course. Then we also had 10.5.5 at long last, which doesn't really bring terribly much new functionality, if any. I certainly haven't noticed any new functionality of you.
No, I haven't, definitely.
No. What it does do is bring a good handful of security fixes. I think it's between 10 and 20. It's a fairly big list. And what struck me, I've had this thing for a long time where Apple get these notions sometimes where they dig their heels in and refuse to listen to reason. And one of those things is in Safari, where the default option is that if you download a file of a type which it considers quote-unquote safe, it will go ahead and open that automatically for you. It will also automatically start downloading files if a website sends them to you. So that's what's called the drive-by carpet bombing attack.
Right.
Where you go to a website and suddenly your desktop's full of crud.
We've talked about this before, right? That you should flick that switch in Safari to don't open safe attachments.
Yeah, and this month's list of problems yet again underscores that point. Because this month there were about 4 or 5 flaws with TIFF files, which would allow arbitrary code execution. So go to a website, have it automatically open the TIFF, automatically download the TIFF, automatically open it, you're hacked. That simple.
Nice.
Yeah, without you doing anything apart from going to the website. No clicking OK, no nothing, no opening it yourself. Okay. Go to the website, bang, gone.
So how is this news?
Well, they patched it, but it shows yet again that a quote-unquote safe file type isn't. If you look back over the last year, TIFF problems, PNG problems, JPEG problems, disk images problems, QuickTime videos problems.
And those are all
safe
files.
These are all considered safe. I don't think, with the exception of a .txt file, that any of the safe types have not had serious issues over the last 2 years.
So
these won't be the last, and they're certainly not the first.
So to review, if you go into Safari, go under your preferences and click on the general tab, and then down in the bottom half, under remove download list items manually is one of the choices. Right under that is a checkbox. It is checked, and it says open safe files after downloading. Safe files include movies, pictures, sounds, PDF and text documents, and disk images and other archives. In other words,
PDFs. That's another one that's had serious flaws over the last 2 years.
So it's sort of like they made a list of unsafe files, declared them safe, and that'll automatically open. So you want to uncheck that. And that is so now if I click on a disk image I want to download, now it's going to ask me, do you want to open it? The difference is you want to make sure what it's catching is the ones where you didn't ask to download it, correct?
Yeah, the carpet bombing stuff. So it'll download it and then go and open it on you.
Okay, so it will still let me open things that I intentionally downloaded, but it's just going to ask me first.
It's either ask you or you have to actually click it in the download manager. I don't know because I don't actually use Safari.
Okay.
But it won't open it automatically, which is good.
Right.
Very good, in fact.
It is kind of convenient having that open, but as they always say, it's a mixture of a compromise between convenience and security, right?
Pretty much always, actually. And as if to underscore the point, There was an update to QuickTime, which addressed loads and loads of nasty, evil vulnerabilities, and QuickTime is also considered safe. But to really underscore the point, a few days later, there was a new QuickTime flaw released, which allows for remote code execution. Sorry, arbitrary code execution.
Nice.
So, you know, download a QuickTime file, automatically open it, and you're hacked. Straightforward as that. So, you know, it just proves the point yet again. That needs to go off.
Right, right.
And Apple need to learn that and the carpet bombing. You know, you put those two policies together and you have a real recipe for trouble.
Right, right.
And Apple don't get it. And they keep on saying, no, no, it's a feature. No, it isn't. It's a bloody liability. Turn it off.
Right. It's okay if you let me turn it on actively.
Absolutely.
But it's
the keep fact the option.
Right. But the fact that it's in it default, it does let it open. That's the problem. Well, let's switch over.
Exactly.
There's some good news, right? Some only
yes,
good
there is some good news.
Okay.
Yes. It's good. It's sort of a hint of good news, I guess. We've complained a lot about how slow Apple are at patching the DNS flaw. And they tried to patch it in 10.4 and made a dog's dinner of it and only patched the half that doesn't really matter and left the half that actually matters to everyone untouched. Well, this time they've repatched the bit they patched last time with a more up-to-date patch, which doesn't provide any more security, but the first patch fixed the problem, but made the DNS server really inefficient. Which isn't a problem, because no one actually uses the DNS server in OS X, apart from a very few people running OS X server. So it didn't actually matter to us. But they've optimized that patch, which is good. Then they did patch the resolver libraries, which is what your browser uses, and every other thing that manages to turn a URL into an IP address. So any program you can type a URL into, it uses the resolver program, which is also released by the same people who released the server. And the patch was out on the 8th of June, along with the patch of the server. But Apple have now finally got around to applying it. So that's been properly patched. And going above and beyond the Call of Duty, which I'm impressed at, Apple have also patched their own custom DNS implementation. The sort of the technical under the hood name for it is MDNS, but what you would know it as is Bonjour.
Oh.
And Bonjour is a DNS-based service that Apple have written, which allows them to automatically find stuff on the local area network, and they've patched that too.
Oh, so fantastic.
Exactly. So that is definitely good news.
And we did promise, by the way, that we would stop talking about the DNS flaw up until Apple fixed it, and Apple finally did. So that's good news.
Yeah, there we go. So we're just reporting back in as promised.
All right. We're ending the vegetable section because we want to have an argument.
You want to have an argument.
You do. You started it. So one of the fun things about the internet is miscommunication through chat. And we've talked about a few times where Bart and I have gotten into grammar arguments and it becomes very difficult in text to understand what the other person's saying. So we got in a big fight this week about the language in the iPhone SDK and how it relates to an application called Podcaster that was put up on the App Store. So Apple pulled Podcaster, saying that it repeated functionality that was already in the App Store or in – I'm not exactly sure what their reason.
No, they were saying it duplicated functionality in the iPod software.
Okay. So that's a bad thing, we all think, because Podcaster looked like a pretty cool program. It would allow you to subscribe to podcasts.
The first thing is, I suppose we should back up a little.
Okay.
Because Podcaster has a bit of history. You probably can't remember, but from the very first day, the very first iPhone came out, there was one thing everyone wanted, and people still wanted, but Apple have never delivered, and that's the ability to download podcasts straight to the iPhone. It has permanent internet access. Why should you have to go home, download, and then sync your podcasts?
Right.
For people who are on the go, this is pure insanity.
Yeah. So that's
a real missing feature. And that's what the App Store is all about. It's providing the stuff that Apple doesn't. It's providing extra functionality for the iPhone or the iPod Touch. So in that regard, Podcaster was filling a need fantastically. So they developed the app knowing it had a market. And then at the final hurdle is approval by Apple. So you have to put in all of the investment up front and then hand it over to Apple. And the written guidelines are quite scant, and it doesn't break the written guidelines. Well, so Apple have been doing these bizarre things where they sort of make up a reason as they go. So this time they wrote back and said, you know, I think it was the pull my finger, the fart joke app, was because it was of limited functionality, was the excuse they gave that time.
Well, now,
and this
now,
time,
I've got to break in there. I mean, I'm sorry, pulling the pull my finger application, that was just wrong. I mean, I didn't mind when they pulled the slasher thing, the knife thing. That was okay because it was violent. But
we disagreed on that one.
Right. But we need our fart humor. I'm sorry. That's important stuff.
Exactly. And if Koi Pond is able to get in, which just goes splash, then I don't really see why Pull My Finger shouldn't go in. Because what functionality, what utility is Koi Pond?
Pull My Certainly Finger was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant.
So as time has gone on, I think the two of us have come closer in our opinion that Apple is badly managing the App Store.
Right. But the argument that I wanted to have...
Yes. Anyway, I need to get one more point in though. So Apple gave a reason for saying no. And the actual reason Apple gave was that it duplicated existing iPod functionality, which is an outright lie because the iPod, it does exactly the one thing the iPod doesn't.
Right.
Okay, so they didn't say it broke the rules. They said we don't want it because it duplicates our stuff.
Right. Okay. But the part I wanted to argue, is the people over at Roughly Drafted made an argument that I'm not even going to address, but in it they did a little screenshot of the Apple iPhone SDK, and the language in section 3.3.3 seems to me to say, I remember the reason I want to argue with about it was because you said the problem is you can develop an application and when it's after you've put in all the work, you find out that Apple's decided you're not allowed to do it. My point is I think this language says that they weren't allowed to do it and they knew it ahead of time. Whether or not they should have pulled it, whether or not it duplicates functionality, that's irrelevant. In my specific argument is, I believe that this language, and I'll read it in a second here, says that they shouldn't have been allowed to do it in the first place. So they did have prior knowledge.
One very, very, very simple counterpoint that doesn't even need us to read the thing.
How can you counterpoint before I made my point?
No, but okay. It certainly bears mentioning. Is if it were actually a breach of the rules, Apple wouldn't have to make up a silly argument. They could simply say, as per section 3.3.3, this app is not allowed.
Okay.
And why wouldn't they if there was such a simple smackdown?
Well, but
why would
in
they go
your,
controversial?
In your how many years experience with Apple, has Apple ever given a clear answer?
Well, if there's a clear answer to give, I mean, why would anyone dig themselves a hole when there's a really good answer?
They do that all the time. Well, anyway, what section 3.3.3 says, and it's only one sentence, without Apple's prior written approval, an application may not provide, unlock, or enable additional features or functionality through distribution mechanisms other than the iTunes Store. So the iTunes Store is where you get podcasts, and Podcaster provides it. Enables additional features that are already in the iTunes Store. So how is that not prior knowledge right there?
An application may not... Right. You need to put this into context, first of all. What they are saying here is that if you have an application which does something, I don't know, we'll make up an application. Say an application that's a word processor. Mm-hmm. It writes letters, okay? Mm-hmm. That's a functionality. If you then... give that app to Apple and say, this is my app, and they put it in the App Store, and you then, through some other means, by having the app go to another server and download extra code, have that app then also do spreadsheets. That is providing additional functionality through a distribution mechanism other than the iTunes Store.
So you're saying it's the distribution to the iPhone not coming through the App Store?
It's the application adding or changing what it does in any way other than... by going back through Apple. So if your app does one thing, it cannot do anything else unless you go back through Apple. This rules out things like Java, because Java enables other apps to come down through an entirely different mechanism. It stops all virtual machines. It stops all that kind of carry on. What you present to Apple must be what it is. It cannot become something else unless you go back to Apple.
Now, where do you get all of that? It doesn't say that at all.
Unlock or enable additional features or functionality. We're not talking about getting media. We're talking about additional features or functionality of the software.
See, actually, as I've been rereading it as you say it, as you've been talking, and I think maybe what they're actually talking about is you can't have an application that has a distribution mechanism that isn't through the App Store. So you can't.
They're only talking about features and functionality. Because we know we can have apps that get stuff from elsewhere, because we have loads of them, hundreds of them to choose from. mean, a browser is an app that gets stuff from elsewhere. What is it? I don't remember them, but there's loads of music apps out there, isn't there?
Right.
What do you call those ones everyone likes
Shazam
that I don't use?
And Midomi and all those.
Yeah, and there's another even more famous one.
Oh, Pandora.
Pandora, thank you. All of those apps, I mean, they clearly show. There's Flickr apps, there's RSS apps, there's stuff for the YouTube app.
I wasn't talking about different content. I'm saying that what I think it might actually be saying is you can't distribute the application itself through some method other than the iTunes Store.
That too.
What the developers,
as well as distributing the app, you can also, even if you do distribute the app can't then update itself. So it's even stronger than just don't distribute the app in any other way.
So when you come out with Podcaster 2.0 after 1.0, you have to go through the App Store again, is what it's saying.
Every single change to the functionality that you make has to go back through Apple.
Well, that
makes
sense.
So you can't get it in and then change it.
Why didn't you just say that? Why don't you just say that?
That's a really good way of summing it up, isn't it? That's a really good way of summing it up. It's funny how when you think about these things a little longer, they make a lot more sense.
We argued for, half an hour. And then I started telling you.
You were rushing out to work and I was rushing somewhere else and we still couldn't quite pull ourselves away from the keyboard.
And then I started telling you, you were doing invalid arguing at one point. You were not debating correctly.
There's someone on the internet and they're wrong. I presume you've seen that XKCD.
Yeah, I think I have that up on my bulletin board at work, actually.
It's fantastic. XKCD is wonderful.
All right. You have a cool story to tell about a technology solution you did.
Yes, I do. Macs are great because they run OS X, but they're not just great because they run OS X, because the actual hardware does really cool stuff that PCs don't do either. And one of the things is they have some pretty impressive built-in stuff that's actually in firmware. And one of those is Target Disk Mode. That's actually a piece of firmware, a little chip that does that. There's no operating system running. You could rip out all of your hard drives and Target Disk Mode would still work.
Oh.
But the obvious solution for Target Disk Mode is it turns your Mac into a giant big pen drive. And I do that at work sometimes because I'm not allowed to put it on the network. But if I need to get something from my work machine onto it, I put it into Target Disk Mode, connect it to my work machine, the hard drive shows up and I copy stuff across. But that's the normal use of Target Disk Mode.
Tell people how you normally enable Target Disk Mode.
You turn off the Mac, turn it on, and hold down the T key until a little FireWire icon comes up.
While it's connected to your second Mac.
You don't actually have to have it connected at the time. You can plug it in afterwards.
Once you have that
big FireWire sign, it's saying, I'm a hard drive now, and that's all I am.
Hey, wait a minute. You said you could do it without a hard drive in it. That wouldn't make any sense.
Yes, exactly. It does a little more. I wasn't sure if it did more, but I had a reason to find out.
Okay.
So the better half has an iMac, which is quite old. It's the very last G5 iMac, bought, I think, 1 week before the big Intel news. I think it had arrived and was unpacked about 10 hours or so before Steve went, and now we're going Intel.
Yeah.
Which was a little annoying, but there you go. But the optical drive has died. The machine is fine apart from that, but the optical drive has died, and it's died pretty badly because when you stick in a CD, it seems to like to rip layers off it. So it not only does it not read CDs, it kills them.
Nice.
So if you need some data destroyed, stick them into that Mac, problem solved.
You don't need a shredder.
Disk shredder, exactly. But unfortunately, the machine had some issues. It started to give random kernel panics. Now, they weren't often. They were about once a day, but that's too much. That's not normal. So I said, maybe it's dodgy RAM. Okay, how do you test the RAM on a Mac? You boot into diagnostic mode, and the DVD that comes with your Mac has diagnostics for your Mac. So even if you later buy the next version of OS X, don't throw out the disk that came with your Mac. So normally you'd stick that disk in, hold down D for diagnostic, boot up, and it'll boot into the diagnostic mode where you can run loads of tests.
I did not know that. One of which is a test of the RAM. You can do that on any Mac, I think.
It goes back a certain distance, but it goes back a long way.
I do wish they would put it on the label which computer it's for, because I've got 25 of those gray disks, and they don't always say.
Okay. Mine, this one here says in big writing, iMac G5, Mac OS X, install disk 1.
Yeah, no, mine don't all say that. I've got them from several Macs where it's just like, okay, what was that? That's like some G3 Mac I had 7 years ago or something. I don't know which
one. But anyway, so we have the issue that we have an iMac that needs its diagnostic mode with a optical drive that chews disks, and there was no way I was going to stick the one and only G5 iMac boot disk into it, because then we would have no G5 iMac boot disk, and we still wouldn't be any closer to figuring out what was up with the Mac. So we tried first, we have an external DVD burner, which is USB. So we thought, it's USB, the USB mouse works when you boot up, so maybe the USB CD drive works. So we stuck in the CD, plugged it into the back of the iMac, or plugged it into our USB hub, paired it up, nothing. Didn't see the drive, just booted up normally. It's like, okay, maybe it doesn't like the hub. So take the hub out of the equation, straight into the back of the iMac. Same thing. It obviously doesn't initialize the USB external drives until later in the boot sequence. And actually, as we watched it later, the little LED doesn't come on until after the OS X has started loading. So clearly the BIOS wasn't touching it. So it's like, uh-oh. So I had the genius idea of sticking the G5 disk into my MacBook Pro, putting my MacBook Pro into target disk mode, plugging that with a mail-to-mail FireWire cable. Every Mac geek, by the way, needs to own a mail-to-mail FireWire cable. Vital equipment. I got a really long one with one of my external hard drives, which I keep with me at all times. It's in my backpack, always, along with a crossover network cable. It's the other thing every nerd should have. anyway, so I put it into target disk mode by holding down T while booting, while the DVD was in my MacBook Pro. Plugged my MacBook Pro with the mail-to-mail FireWire into the back of the iMac, which was turned off. Turned on the iMac and held down the Option key. And the Option key lets you choose what volume to boot from. And I was hoping that the FireWire would happen early enough in the process that the drive would show up. So I held down the Option key, and it takes quite a while because it's firing up the disk and it's checking over the FireWire cable and stuff. But one by one, extra disks started to pop up on the list. So first the Mac's internal drive popped up, then the internal drive of a MacBook Pro popped up, and then I heard the DVD drive spin up, and I thought, oh, this is going to work, this is going to work. And lo and behold, two more images popped up, installer and diagnostics.
Oh,
clicked on diagnostics, clicks the next arrow, and the diagnostics booted. They booted quite slowly because it was going through the FireWire from the DVD drive in my MacBook Pro instead of in the actual machine. Booted up, ran the diagnostics. Turns out there was nothing wrong on a hardware level. Ran fixed disk permissions, and the machine, touch wood, seems fine since. But I just thought most people would not realize that every Mac is an external DVD drive for every other Mac.
Now, a couple of things. The good news is you could also, now you know you could also run the installer at this point, right? If you needed
to
reinstall the OS.
Yes. Now, exactly. Because this is also something we were worried about. What happens if something really bad goes wrong with this machine and it has no optical drive? Then what? Well, now we know what. We'll use my MacBook Pro to install OS X onto that machine.
Now, there's another thing that worries me is that it seems like we're starting to see FireWire go away. Like on the MacBook Air, there is no FireWire, but they built in the ability to, you could probably run that diagnostic over the air, like the way they do, you can install software over the air.
I haven't tested it, but I imagine you must be able to, because that's how you're meant to install OS X.
Right.
So obviously the BIOS in the MacBook Air not only is able to read USB, but it's also able to read the network. It can see the airport while it's in the BIOS, I guess. It's the only possible way that could work.
Yeah, now, my fears with the FireWire seeming to go away, it's getting harder and harder, for example, to find FireWire hard drives, it seems. Most of them are USB, and if you create a bootable clone, but it's on a USB drive, that doesn't do you any good, because you can't boot off a USB bootable clone, right?
You don't seem to be able. You certainly can't boot off a USB CD drive. I haven't tried with the USB hard disk.
I don't think you can.
But certainly, I have never seen it done, which I guess it doesn't mean you can't, but I certainly have never seen it done, whereas I have seen many people boot off many FireWire drives. It's, you know, if you do a clone backup, do it onto a FireWire disk, and you have a bootable clone, so you can actually keep working in case of utter emergency.
Right. In fact, that's one of the things that I was able to diagnose some of the problems with my blown hard drive was I booted off a bootable clone on a FireWire drive. But if I'd had that bootable clone, oddly enough, my bootable clone was actually Lindsay's off of her MacBook. But my Mac booted off
anyway.
It was fine. It was like, oh, there's an operating system. Okay, I'll use that.
Yeah, I certainly don't think that would have worked if Lindsay's had been a G4 or a G3.
Yeah, probably not.
Because I don't imagine Intel Macs would be too happy with that.
No. But since everyone in the house has a better computer than I do, it's not really a problem.
Yeah, they're all more modern. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, that's a very creative solution. I really like that.
Yeah, and the two of us are just looking at each other going, you can't do this on PCs. There's just no way.
Well, I think that's a good final line for this week's Chit Chat Across the Pond, Bart.
Okie dokie. I presume we're catching up as normal next week.
I think so.
Okie dokie. Until then, happy computing.
Well, during the recording of the live show, we took a poll of which is the worst vegetable, broccoli or Brussels sprouts. And as of the time of this recording, we don't have all the votes in yet, but it looks like Brussels sprouts is 66% of the people say Brussels sprouts is worse than broccoli. So, so far, I'm right. There was a suggestion that perhaps celery ought to be put into the list, but then that would have just made the poll out of control. So we got to stop it there. Hey, this week I was on the Mac Roundtable again. It's been ages since I was on. This week included Don McAllister, his Bartliness, and Adam Christensen. And I think it was a great show. It's the first time Bart and I got to be on the show together, so that was really fun too. I think it comes out on Monday, or it looks like somebody in the chat room is saying here that Don tweeted that it's already out, so be sure to listen in. I listen even when I'm not on the show, and I just love it, except for when I hate it. You have to listen to the show to understand why I would say that. So, you know the closing line by heart. Now let's all sing along together. Keep those emails coming of complaint, gratitude, and especially the Dumb Question Corner emails by sending them on to nosillacast@gmail.com. Be sure to follow me, too, on Twitter at twitter.com/podfeed. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.